Welcome back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 133, we discuss our thoughts on the first week of the League's Cup, how the International Champions Cup is doing in the TV ratings, our favorite games of the past week, plus letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnaya. For any new listeners that haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast, what we do on a weekly basis is dive into the soccer media business, specifically the streaming, television, so and everything in regards to that, as far as whether it's TV rights, production quality, our favorite commentators, some tips and tricks about how to get the most bang for your buck to watch soccer from around the world, as well as locally, and much, much more. All right, Kartik, so let's kick things off this week by talking about what we've been watching. For me personally, I haven't had a chance to watch as much as I would like normally. This week was the week of my move, so I moved up from South Florida to North Florida and just settling in. But I did catch a few games, so how about you kick it off as far as some of the games that stood out for you for this past week that you watched?
Yeah, so I watched the Liverpool Dortmund game on TNT, and the thing that was disconcerting about that was that there was a lot of obviously they went with the Liverpool TV crew, right? Instead of what we had announced on this podcast this previous week, which would have been Kev Egan and Charlie Davies, they had Kalen Carr and Charlie Davies in the Atlanta studio. At least I believe it was in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And Davies gave more analysis at halftime than Jason McAteer, who was the Liverpool TV announcer, had the whole entire first half about tactics and about Dortmund. I guess if you're a Liverpool fan, and I'm sure 90% of the people watching were Liverpool fans, that crew was fine. But there was no real kind of tactical analysis or evaluation of Dortmund and how they were playing. And it was Gio Reyna, a U.S. Youth International's first start. And it was really good to see him in the first team with a squad number 38, even though that's a high squad number. That's not a number 68 or, 75 that we see on some of these young players. So it was a good match. It was an entertaining match for a preseason match. Dortmund looked sharper. I really liked the addition of Julian Brandt onto that team. So that was entertaining. Watch the Open Championship all weekend. The NBC.
So yeah, let me just chime in terms of the Liverpool game too. I mean that's the thing though that's unfortunate is that TNT keeps on making the same mistakes. Well, not the same mistakes, but they keep on making mistakes over and over again. And like you said, to having that crew that was a LFC TV crew, you mean definitely made it one-sided in terms of the analysis. And even the analysis, like you said too, is very weak. As one example, I mean, Paco Alcacer, the star striker for Dortmund, who's been so great in the Bundesliga, the commentator for LFC TV was Steve Hunter, and he kept on calling him Pablo Alcacer. In some ways, I mean, for me personally, I had no issues with this, but for some American viewers and listeners, they may have wanted a subtitles across the bottom because it was a really thick Scouse accents. And this is something that, yes, taking the LFC TV feed of this match, I mean, TNT could have easily had, I don't know, Kevin Egan, or maybe he was busy, but I mean, Charlie Davies or Kalen Carr doing the commentary for this game, which would have been better than LFC TV. And for Dortmund fans, I feel sorry for them. I mean, they would have watched this game going, just shaking their heads, going like, this is all about Liverpool. But having said that, the attendance for the game was great. I mean, it was great to see a game at the Notre Dame Stadium, over 40,000 watching this one. The game itself, I enjoyed it. I thought the game was good and just, again, disappointing, kind of amateurish coverage by TNT. Hopefully for this next upcoming season, they're learning from their mistakes and improving things, but overall, wasn't too impressed. But back to you, where you're mentioning some of the next games.
Yeah, so I watched very little football this week. Open Championship I watched, it was littered with Premier League ads on NBC the entire weekend, which was good to see. Virtually every commercial break. They have this thing on NBC, which the other channels that cover golf really haven't come around to, which is this playing through the break. So essentially what they do is they have very few pure commercial breaks. And I think they've learned this from soccer, to be honest with you, because of the limited ad time. So what they do is they put the continued action, because golf never stops, really. People who don't watch golf may not realize this is why I can watch golf and not watch baseball, for instance, or not watch cricket. Baseball and cricket have all these stoppages, right? It's the whole, most of the matches stoppages. Same thing with American football. Golf, there's constantly action because you're going from one hole to another, one set of action to another. So basically, they play through the break and they show commercials in three quarters of the screen, and they keep the action going on one quarter of the screen. And there were Premier League ads constantly. The other thing that was pretty telling about NBC's coverage this week was that they brought in Sky every now and then on the coverage. Now, they have really good golf coverage. 30 years ago, when I was a golf fanatic, when I was a little kid, NBC was the worst of the three networks at covering golf. Now they're the best. In fact, ABC doesn't cover golf anymore, and Fox is really bad. And CBS's coverage is roughly the same as it was 30 years ago. They've become very innovative. They've become very good, like they are at the Premier League, masters of their trade. It worries me to bring in Sky, who, by the way, for those of you who know the UK television scene, have monopolized golf in that country, right? They've taken all golf off of terrestrial television and put them behind the satellite paywall. So that concerns me about continued synergy on the Premier League side. I know there are a lot of people out there who prefer any commentary that comes from Britain, that originates from Britain, than from the United States. So they think that the more you integrate Sky, the better. But I think, as we've seen with Sky Sports News and some of the other things, the existing NBC coverage is probably better, right? And there are places where Sky can complement NBC's coverage, but you don't want it to bleed in too much. Mm-hmm. And at least with this golf coverage, it didn't bleed in too much. It was still essentially the NBC product with a little bit of Sky contribution. So that was good.
Yeah, it's almost, with Sky, it's almost as if there's two separate divisions within Sky Sports, which is the Sky Sports News, which is very sensationalized, which is very insular in terms of the things they talk about. If they have the coverage to it, they'll discuss it. If they don't have the rights to it, they'll completely ignore it. And then the other side, which is Sky Sports Television, which is in terms of their broadcast of Premier League matches, and because they have so few games that they televise in comparison to the United States, the coverage for the most part is actually really good, especially, I mean, Monday Night Football with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher and so on and so forth. So it depends which side NBC Sports chooses to go ahead and leverage that talent and that analysis. Having said that, it's still not perfect by any means. This season especially, Kartik, is going to be one of interest to watch. We saw that last season in terms of NBC Sports picking and choosing different bits and pieces of Sky Sports' coverage of the Premier League and leveraging that and incorporating that. This season, I have a feeling they're going to do more of that, but depending on what they pick and choose. In some ways, it's a good spot to be in terms of you have all of your NBC crew who are very experienced and very talented, and now you have at your disposal an opportunity to cherry-pick the Sky Sports coverage that could accentuate and enhance the coverage that you already have of the Premier League. So I'm excited. It's just a few weeks away. So one of the other things I watched this week, Kartik, was this blew me away. For any listeners, yourself included, Kartik, if you didn't watch it, on YouTube, Bournemouth has been doing the preseason training, and they decided to mic up Eddie Howe, which sometimes when I hear the phrase mic up, I'm like, oh God, no, please. Because we've had, I think in MLS games, we've had referee or friendlies, had referees mic'd up, we've had even coaches mic'd up during games, and it seems like to be I don't know, just something that's done that doesn't really work out that well. But this was really interesting because you had in a preseason training, I think Bournemouth, I think was in Spain or Portugal, high intensity, and you see him going through the routine in terms of the training, what he's saying to the players. And to me, it gave me a much better appreciation. I mean, I had a good appreciation of Eddie Howe before, but watching this on YouTube, and the video clip is probably maybe like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, watching him and listening to him and seeing what he focuses on, it blew my mind. And I was like, wow, this guy is, if I'm a player, I'll want to run a mile for him, you know, do whatever it takes. Really, really good stuff. So it's free. It's on YouTube. If you YouTube Eddie Howe mic'd up Bournemouth training, I'm sure it'll come up. And there's actually a series of them. That was eye-opening. That's something I haven't seen before done at that level. Great stuff.
Yeah, finishing up what I watched, and that's a great shout. I need to watch it. What I watched this week. Watched the NWSL Chicago Red Stars NC Courage match, and I watched it at my parents' house Sunday night. The big question for me, and I had never thought about this, Chris, is my dad, who had never seen these two teams before, North Carolina was wearing white. Now, the graphics package that was installed showed on the top with the score bug showed Chicago in light blue, which is their color, sky blue, if you will. They're like the city colors of Chicago. That's what the Red Stars wear. And then North Carolina Courage in navy blue. And my dad kept saying, "Well, why don't they show the color of the teams?" And I said, "Well, they do. North Carolina Courage, their color is navy blue, and then the Red Stars are sky blue." And then I realized he was talking about the kits because the Courage had to wear their change kit, which was white with the navy blue strip on it, right? Mm-hmm. Or with one stripe. So that that was something that was interesting because I hadn't really thought about that. When you have a score bug that is because I think we're so used to seeing these teams play, it's second nature to me. When you have a score bug that's installed with team graphics, sometimes it confuses the person watching because Chicago is also wearing blue, even though, again, it's a lighter blue. There was confusion. My father wasn't sure which team was which. It was a good broadcast. Jen Hildreth always does, I think, every women's soccer league match, going back to the matches on for WPS on Fox 10 years ago, did the commentary with Angela Huchels. The thing that was so ironic was they had a record crowd in Chicago for a women's soccer match, a women's soccer club match, not a U.S. Women's national team match, over 17,000 at the stadium that used to be called Toyota Park. I forget what it's called now. But Sam Kerr stole the show, the Australian international who is one of the greatest players in the world. She was forgotten about at the World Cup after the U.S. Went on their rampage, their run in the knockout stages, beating France, England, and the Netherlands in succession. Kerr was one of the stories of the World Cup, remember, until Australia got knocked out in the round of 16. But she reasserted her name as a prominent name, at least among fans of women's soccer in the United States with that performance. So she was phenomenal to watch. Watched the League's Cup this week, two League's Cup matches. Galaxy Tijuana was on ESPN, big ESPN. John Champion and Taylor Twellman on the call. Their chemistry is really good. And for those of you who haven't watched them through the course of the season, and obviously they had done some matches before. They did the El Clasico match together that we were at, remember, 2 years ago. Yeah. And they've done some various other games through the years together. But I don't think they've gotten the number of reps where they're doing a match together every week until this season. They can play off each other's reads really well. And Twellman is a guy that is excitable during a broadcast, makes great points. To me, is the best co-commentator perhaps the U.S. has ever produced. Champion complements him perfectly. If anything, yep. I think it's an even better team than Dark and Twellman. So there were a couple times during this match where Champion seeing what was happening in the match, was able to tee up Twellman perfectly for analysis. Other points where Champion's kind of dryish sense of humor was able to play off Twellman, what Twellman had said perfectly. So really good team, that their chemistry now midway through the MLS season, or a little more than midway, has developed. And this was a great match between the Galaxy and Tijuana. Galaxy won on penalties. The next night, watched Houston and Club America on ESPN Plus, and in that match, Houston got the penalty kick, spectacular goal from DeMarcus Beasley that I'm sure a lot of people have seen on YouTube or the MLS website or Twitter. But Club America wins on penalties. So that cup competition, which we'll have some information about in a few minutes, I'm actually enjoying it. I know a lot of people are just poo-pooing it, but I'm actually enjoying it, making an effort to watch it. And so far the matches have been good. You can argue about whether a cup competition, which involves two nations in a 40-team confederation, should have been improved by that confederation. I would argue it should not have been. That's my argument. But now that the tournament's actually happening, I'm watching it and enjoying it, even though if I were head of CONCACAF, I would have said no to the U.S. and Mexico holding this tournament.
What's your opinion about what Grant Wall said about the League's Cup? And for those listeners who don't know, so he said, he tweeted out, League's Cup is a watered-down, nothing tournament where even the teams involved don't play their best lineups, do better MLS and Liga MX.
I mean, so Zlatan and Jonathan Dos Santos did not play for LA. And there were a lot of Mexican teams that were rotating their teams in and out. I think the only way they make this more meaningful is to put something other than prize money at the end, which is to give a berth in the CONCACAF Champions League, potentially, since they have CONCACAF sanctioning, or something of that note. But then I don't think they necessarily want to make it into a Europa League type tournament by putting that at the end. They want to elevate it, right? Mm-hmm. So are they willing to do that? There is a competition that involves nations from outside these two countries that is essentially a play-in competition to the CONCACAF Champions League that goes on around this time, or will go on in a few weeks' time. They could do that. When they expand the tournament next year, which we'll get to in a few minutes, that's something they could do. But yeah, Wall seems pretty sour on it. A lot of the other typical media that covers MLS seems pretty sour on it. I don't know. I'm just watching the football, Chris. I mean, I can be like they do. They are on a lot of things. You know, people who listen to this show or follow me on Twitter or read my articles know I'm hypercritical and sometimes a sourpuss about this stuff. But, you know, I'm not watching as much MLS this season. I think the MLS product has been watered down by overexpansion and playing a lot of midweek games. And these matches are enjoyable. At least they give me something. They give MLS a target, or these MLS clubs a target, and give me something different to watch. So, yeah, I've watched two of the four matches in the tournament so far, and my intention is to try and watch as much of it as I can. Obviously, there are only three more matches this year, but yeah, Next year it's going to be expanded.
I'm the same as you, Kartik, where any soccer is good soccer to watch. I mean, so I have preferences in terms of the style of play and the teams I like to watch and the underdogs and those things. But it's very rare that I will, you mean, switch off a game of soccer or be disappointed with a game of soccer. I just love soccer. That's my life, really. But the two things out of this League's Cup which are interesting, I think, in terms of one, Grant Wall's comment. This is a tournament, the League's Cup, that is televised by ESPN and Univision, or now Tudo DN. This is not a broadcast that Fox is covering. So I think that's part of it, too. Would Grant Wall have said that about League's Cup if it was a Fox tournament? It's an ESPN tournament, so it's a direct competitor.
Chris, I hate to cut you off. I think that might be why I'm watching it, too. I hate to say it. I hate to just come out and say that. If these matches had been on Fox, if I didn't know I was getting John Champion and Taylor Twellman, would I watch? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So for me, it works the opposite way. It's like, oh, yeah, it's on ESPN. I'm going to watch it. If it's on Fox, I'll be like, it'll be a biased MLS broadcast. They'll talk too much. They won't give me the kind of information I need. Yeah, that's a good point. Go ahead.
Yeah, No. And the second thing is that to me, this tournament 100% is all about being a competitor to the International Champions Cup. So whether you love the ICC or hate the ICC or indifferent to the ICC, this is a direct competition to that. And it's sums a way of looking at North America and saying, okay, what can we produce and create that's going to be a competitor to that? And try to get those dollars, you mean, that people are spending on tickets, let's have them go see Liga MX teams in LA or you mean a game against one of the MLS teams, etc. So you'll notice that there's no MLS teams involved in the ICC, but the MLS teams, of course, the Leagues Cup's been a MLS, Liga MX, some tournament where they're working together on that. As far as some of the other coverage I saw, Kartik, I saw the Africa Cup of Nations final between Senegal and Algeria. A couple of points about this one which were interesting. I think one is that there was really good pre-match coverage with Jeremy St. Louis and Solomon Florin, which I'm not familiar with, but he's an expert on African soccer. He was great. He had a lot of passion, a lot of energy. Either he's from Nigeria or a Nigeria supporter, but he was able to add a lot of analysis and kind of information that really helped enhance that coverage of the Africa Cup of Nations. The game itself was very physical. Algeria scored an early goal and they just shut up shop, parked the bus, did everything possible. Very physical game, and it wasn't a pretty one to watch by any means. But the interesting thing in this one is that the goal that was scored by Algeria in the first few minutes of this game, the commentator didn't even realize the ball had gone into the net. It was a weird deflection. It had went over the goalkeeper. I guess the commentator thought the ball had gone out, or presumed the ball had gone out, and kept on commentating. Meanwhile, as soon as he saw the players celebrating, then he switched and like, oh, what a bizarre goal and a bizarre. I think it's one of those things. I'm sure he's calling it off the monitor. If he had been in the stadium, I'm sure he probably would have probably seen better that it actually had gone in the net and wasn't relying on the TV footage in terms of he's just calling what he's seeing on television. That was strange, and I haven't seen that happen in a very, very, very long time. But still, I enjoyed watching the final, even though it wasn't the greatest advert for the Africa Cup of Nations, but the passion was there in the stadium as well as by the players on the pitch. I watched the LA Galaxy against LAFC game, Kartik, on the Friday night, advertised as a 10 p.m. kickoff, and we talked about this last week. The game kicked off at 10:30 Eastern time instead, but the first like 20 to 30 minutes of this game were extraordinarily good. It was riveting. It was fantastic start to this game, and kind of the drama building up into this game was Zlatan in terms of some of the things he had said about Carlos Vela, and LAFC get the early goal through Carlos Vela in terms of him being fouled in the penalty area, and then Zlatan coming back. The first 30 to 45, well, basically the first half was fantastic. And then, the first 30 minutes were fantastic, and then it started getting physical, then it started getting scrappy, then it started being, lots of, niggly fouls, and the referee blowing his whistle every couple of minutes, losing control of the match at times, players just circling around the ref, and it changed the game, and it became a scrappy game, and eventually LA Galaxy, in the second half, scored two more goals to win that one. But the first half was definitely a huge thumbs up. Last but not least, I watched a preseason match, Exeter against Swansea, and always enjoy looking forward to the new season. Anything else, Kartik, that you want to point out that you watched this past week?
No, I have the Sporting Liverpool match on DVR, but it was going on simultaneously with that Leagues Cup match, the Houston match. So I do plan on watching that today. I can give some analysis as to whether TNT's coverage was actually more encompassing, not Liverpool TV now. Let's keep in mind, though, Sports Illustrated, which is part of the same media company as SI Now, which is part of the same media company as TNT, already has an existing deal with Liverpool TV. So when they went to the Liverpool TV commentators, Hunter and McAteer, on Friday, I wasn't as shocked as maybe some other people were. So maybe this broadcast was the same as Friday's, but I'll find out when I watch the DVR.
So we're in the summer of 2019, and I think in the future, when we look back to the summer of 2019, we will look at the summer as being the one that was oversaturated with soccer in the United States. Now, I mean, there's been a lot going on this summer already. So we've had the Copa America, we've had the Gold Cup, we've had the Women's World Cup. So three major tournaments being played at the same time for practically a month, with several games. So even during the height of those three tournaments, there were as many as seven games a day televised. After that, after those three tournaments, now we're in the stage where we have International Champions Cup, we have the Leagues Cup, we've got regular season Major League Soccer games, we've got regular season Liga MX games, we have a whole bunch of other teams too that are in the United States doing friendlies, including Liverpool, including Borussia Dortmund, Aston Villa, Derby County, Bristol City, Cardiff City. There's just tons of teams from around the world. Boca Juniors, River Plate, that are coming to the United States to play friendlies. And I think in many ways, this is a massive country. Soccer is growing. But families only have so much money to spend on tickets, and it's such a big country too. So you've got teams coming over, and it's affecting attendances. The attendances for the International Champions Cup are down this summer compared to previous summers. There's been some small crowds, but there have been some big crowds too. The Real Madrid game, one of the ones, was over 50,000 in attendance. Yeah, so it's one of those things. Attendances are affected. At the same time, ticket prices haven't gone down. But there's so much to choose from. And at the same time, there's so much to watch on television and streaming, so many just choices. It's in some ways overwhelming. So I think that's what we'll look at 2019, the summer, is oversaturation of these teams coming to the United States. And I'm sure some of these teams are disappointed with the attendances they're getting or with the reception that they're receiving. It's one of those things that there's so many other sports too. There's so much going on in the summer, and I wonder too if this summer of 2019 will impact how many teams come over in the future in the United States, and maybe they'll be heading to Asia more or Australasia or other parts of the world. And we'll still see teams coming to the United States for sure. But at the epicenter of all this, I think the International Champions Cup is the one that probably needs to do some more thinking in terms of how they market this tournament. This season especially, this summer, they've made a lot of mistakes. And that's something that they have to be careful about what they do in the future, because this is a huge operation. Cost a lot of money to pay these teams to come out here. And it's a huge undertaking. So anyway, that's my thoughts on the summer of 2019, which will be known in my regard as the oversaturation of soccer. And let's move on to TV streaming news. Not a lot to talk about this week, but definitely one that's pretty big for next season.
Yeah, so some is going to expand the League's Cup from 8 teams to 16 teams. For the 2020 competition, there'll be 8 teams from each league, Major League Soccer and Liga MX. And my understanding is there will be teams in Liga MX that are part of the League's Cup that are also part of the CONCACAF Champions League. I'm not sure how MLS is going to – I think I saw, but I don't recall how they're going to allocate their 8 spots. So that is then takes away that whole idea that I had of CONCACAF Champions League qualification at the end. But it will be a 16-team tournament next year. The thing I want to see with this, I'm curious to see, is I think the League's Cup, you're absolutely right, Chris, about it being a defensive move by some against the ICC, which is capitalized on the desire for people to see summer football and high-level summer international club football in this country. The ICC, I think, being able to tie in Chivas is what triggered this. So will Chivas continue to be in the ICC, or will they revert to the Somme tournament. That's, to me, the big question and the big battleground. The League's Cup could have 50 teams, right? But if they don't have Chivas, there is an advantage to the ICC. Because between all the European clubs and then Chivas, who is the co-most popular Mexican club, or the co-most popular club, period, in the United States, along with Club America, they're not able to capitalize on the full popularity of Liga MX unless they have Chivas in the tournament.
Yeah. Definitely a good one to look out for. Moving on to TV ratings from this past week. Again, we'll have all the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage. But the big number from this past week was Real Madrid against Arsenal in the International Champions Cup. 352,000 viewers on this one on ESPN. What's interesting in this past week is in terms of soccer coverage, it's been mostly ESPN that has been broadcasting any major soccer games other than, say, TNT that have had some of the Liverpool games. And I think FS1 had maybe MLS game or two, but anyway, so the 352 was the big one. The ICC, Atlanta against DC United in MLS on Sunday, 328,000 viewers on ESPN. That LA Galaxy LAFC one on that Friday night, 317,000 viewers. Any other ones there, Kartik, that jump out at you that are interesting?
Oh, yeah, so I just remembered, and this is my fault for not jotting it down. I did watch an MLS match on Fox this week, which was Orlando City and Red Bull. That was Sunday night after that NWSL match on ESPN, or on ESPN2. So I did watch that match, and it obviously didn't register a good enough number, which doesn't surprise me. We've seen a lot of sub-100,000 numbers for FS1 on MLS recently. But the number that really jumps out at me, again, is the Atlanta number, 328 for Atlanta. And that took place right before the NWSL match I was talking about and the FS1 MLS match. Atlanta, DC United, 328,000. Atlanta seems to be – and I guess Seattle, right? Those seem to be the only two MLS teams that can consistently break this hoodoo of not being able to crack 200 or 250 in terms of national viewership. I know the LA Clasico did this week, but that's for that specific match, right? Mm-hmm. When the Galaxy play next, oh, we saw it in the Leagues Cup, right? They down to under 150,000 viewers, and when LAFC plays, they don't necessarily have a following that follows them. So again, Atlanta is, I don't know if they're an anomaly or they're the model. This is the big question, because when you talk about Major League Soccer and you talk about the new clubs coming in, Nashville, the Inter Miami team, Austin, there's going to be an announcement about St. Louis very soon. There's going to be an announcement about Charlotte before the end of the year. So you're talking about five new teams, or likely, I should say, St. Louis and Charlotte. Those aren't confirmed yet. Everyone says, well, they need to follow the Atlanta model. Now, the question is, and they said the same thing about Cincinnati. The question is, Chris, now, is Atlanta just an anomaly? Because we're not seeing the popularity of Major League Soccer overall, at least as a television property, rise to the levels Atlanta is at.
I think part of it is, so to me, Atlanta is an outlier in that there's two things. So I could look at Seattle Sounders, and I could look at Atlanta United. The two things that for me stand out are, one is a respect for the club. This is both clubs are clubs that are running their businesses in an efficient manner. In the past, they've made some big buys, but probably the second thing, more importantly, is they're playing exciting, attractive soccer. LAFC is another one. So those three clubs are, I mean, I'm not the biggest MLS fan by any means. But if it's a Seattle LAFC or Atlanta United game, for the most part, I will tune into those, or be more likely to tune in, because I'm expecting exciting, attractive football. But not only that, but to very fast-paced, organized, probably soccer that resembles more the Premier League. I mean, kind of that fast-paced, which isn't always the greatest brand of soccer, but will keep me entertained. Now, maybe those reasons, those are my two reasons. Whether those are the same reasons for other soccer fans around the country that would tune into those broadcasts more than some other teams, that may not be the, you mean it may not be the same for them, but those are the two things that stand out for me, and that's why Atlanta, especially the way they've run the club, the players they've bought, but more so with Tata Martino in terms of the brand of football that they played and the excitement level, that has got me hooked. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a few here. So first up is Alex G., and Alex says, have we almost hit a point where cord cutting has become more expensive than cable if you want to watch everything? So this is a tough question because it all depends on, you mean, so for example, some places, you mean, some, if you're a part of a housing development, sometimes you might have your cable included for free or at low cost. Other times you might have a satellite dish and you're spending, say, $200 to $300 a month to get everything that you're getting now. Cable, it could be anywhere from $100 to $200, depending on what you're getting and all the different packages and options, as well as spending money on equipment that you're renting out, or you're tied into, like I say, a one-year or two-year contract. So at the end of the day, it differs for a lot of people around this country in terms of what you're currently getting if you haven't cut the cord yet. So for me, from personal experience, so I cut the cord, I think, about 3 years ago. Just moved into a new house, and we haven't signed up for any cable services. So we've cut the cord. But in terms of internet service, which is really a utility, there was, I think, just a couple of options, which was Comcast or Earthlink, and I ended up going with Comcast and have a high-speed fiber connection that I need for work, as well as, you mean, watching movies with the kids, etc. And I'm paying $60 a month for that. Now, if I add on, like Alex says, he wants to watch everything. Well, if I add on Fanatis, which is $10 a month, if I add on Fubo, which is, I think, about $54 a month, which has almost everything except for the ESPNs. If I add on Sling TV, which is, I think, $20 or $25 a month. Personally, I have almost all of the streaming packages available because I need to be on top of those in terms of figuring out what's working, what's not working, what's great. I mean, is PlayStation View great, wonderful? Is YouTube TV, what does it have, what doesn't it have? So I'm signing up for a lot of these services anyway, so I can give back the feedback to you guys, the listeners. So to answer Alex's question, to me, it's, you're depending on what you go for and depending on the situation you're in, it could be more expensive than cable, or it could be that you're saving a lot of money depending on what you're looking for. There's so many options, it is sometimes overwhelming. But we're here to help answer those questions, to try to figure out the best way for you to get your soccer watching experience now, whether that's through cable, satellite, streaming, or over the air, whatever it may be. What about you, Kartik? Do you have a sense for if we are at the point where it's getting more expensive than cable, or what's your scenario?
Yeah, I think it's more expensive if you do all of the packages you need. Let's say, okay, if you're just watching football, maybe not. If you just, you know, you need Fubo and you want to buy some of these various ESPN Plus, whatever. But if you want to watch movies, if you want to watch news, you'll have to pay for some sort of CNN service. You'll have to pay for Stars, Showtime, HBO, all the channels that are offered. They're offered via Apple TV or Amazon Prime or whatever service, Roku, that you use, but you would have to pay for those. So I think it gets your cable bill up to a point where or your bill, it's not a cable bill anymore, right? Your bill up to a point where it's more expensive than cable or satellite, if provided you negotiate with your satellite company. Now, I called DirecTV, threatened to cancel, and got my bill negotiated down. And essentially the channels I wanted and continued to watch for significantly less than I was paying previously. However, there are always these little kind of disputes. So right now there's some sort of dispute going on between CBS and DirecTV, which is preventing me from having CBS, of the local CBS channel on DirecTV, and the Smithsonian channel, and one or two other channels that might be owned by the same company. I'm trying to remember what channels those are, but I'm having having issues with DirecTV on that now. That just popped up this week. So there are always these sort of carriage disputes that happen where channels get dropped. Often they only get dropped temporarily. As we've seen in the case of Bein, they get dropped permanently. But so you can buffer yourself against that possibly happening by cutting the cord. Mm-hmm.
The two things I love about cutting the cord are, one is that there's no contracts. So, for example, if you're signing up for DirecTV or you're signing up for Comcast, oftentimes there's a minimum one-year contract. Or if there isn't a minimum one-year contract, you end up having to pay more. So with cord cutting, you can really jump from place to place to place, or try to figure out which streaming service is best for you and your family and your situation. And the second thing is there's tons of free trials available. So most of the leading streaming services offer free trials anywhere from 5 days to 7 days to 14 days. And you can really kick the tires, go for a test drive and see which ones work best for you. That's something you can't do with Comcast or DirecTV or UVerse or whichever traditional TV distributor. So whether it's cable or satellite, you can't do that. You just have to. You're in, and that's it. You're in, and you're locked in. So again, going back to Alex's question, which is a great question, it all depends on your situation. It all depends on what you want to watch. You can save money and cut the cord, have an internet connection, and then subscribe to the channels or the streaming packages that you want in order to be able to watch the soccer that you want. But if you want everything, even if you want everything through DirecTV, which you can't get everything through DirecTV because there's some channels like beIN Sports that you can't get, if we want everything through Dish Network, Dish Network right now has a carriage dispute with the Fox Sports regional channels, so you can't get everything through there. So I guess the great thing about it is that in the land of liberty, there are lots of options available and competition is good. So in your use case, Alex, just see what's out there and kind of test the ground, and you'll figure out which is the best one for you. Next up is Zaka Takano. And Zaka Takano says, guys, the Liga MX broadcasts are now trash. And this is me talking. Liga MX, the new season started just this past weekend. So he says, guys, the Liga MX broadcasts are now trash. In Mexico, it is customary to call a goal and immediately to advertise something to avoid. Now, to avoid advertising conflicts, when a goal is scored, the announcer voice for the US broadcast is muted, and an announcer from Miami essentially calls the goal. Once the on-site broadcaster finishes off with his Mexican ad, the Miami voice pans out and the broadcaster is unmuted. The same Miami voice calls the American ads. When that is happening, the on-site guy is muted again. So that's I can't believe that. That's really enlightening in terms of, so if you're in Mexico watching a Liga MX game and there's a goal, there's an ad that's played. Now, with Univision Deportes rebranding as TUDN, they are working a lot more closely with Televisa in Mexico and sharing a lot of resources and coverage to make, you mean, kind of their both of the broadcasters better and bigger and all that. But in this case, this does not translate well to a US audience, where you're going to have an ad for some Mexican product that's maybe not even available in the US, or is not paying to have that free ad or that ad broadcast to the United States. So that's a bit messy there. But it's definitely some good information there from Zaka Takano. Josh Klempke says, going back to what Kartik was talking about in last week's podcast about how nations were basically figuring out ways to work the system to improve their FIFA rankings, which could benefit them now with CONCACAF looking at FIFA rankings for World Cup qualifying. Josh Krempke says, referring to Wales and their lack of friendlies, didn't Poland do the same prior to either the World Cup or Euro 2016? I seem to remember the rules being changed because they up-jumped their coefficient by not playing friendlies and ruining their scores. And I think they actually went up into, I think, the first part because of that. Ted says, hi, gents. I know you briefly discussed this on the last pod, but do you have any insights or thoughts on how MLS is scheduling their national broadcasts? Galaxy versus LAFC is one of, if not the premier match of the season. It comes at a time when there's no competition from other soccer, the NFL, American college football, or NBA. Why on earth was the game buried at 10 p.m. Eastern and ending after midnight on a Friday and not in a better time slot for viewers? Now, Kartik, this is something that we've talked about in the past a little bit, is that there's two schools of thought here. I mean, Major League Soccer is definitely, I mean, the clubs are focused on trying to get as many tickets sold for the games, and TV coverage is less important in many ways, that it's really kind of more focused on, it seems to be at least, trying to get tickets sold. And I think this is a case of that too, where if you're in Los Angeles and you want to watch LAFC, LA Galaxy in person, a kickoff time at 7:30 Eastern time, 7:30 local time, sorry, Pacific time, would be perfect in terms of trying to avoid the rush hour traffic of Friday night. Perfect time for a game, even in not too early, where it's going to be even hotter. And that does not translate well for the East Coast, for their time zone, for our time zone. But I don't think there's any other solution other than moving this game to a Saturday night or a Sunday night. But then you're still dealing with weather issues.
Yeah, I think that this is all based on attendance and the need to try and create a big event in LA specifically, and trying to create the sort of atmosphere. And we have this for, quite frankly, for other West Coast sports. I don't follow other American professional sports, although I do remember when I did, and you would get the big Lakers game at 10:30 on the East Coast, or the big Dodgers game at 10:30 on the East Coast. There is still this issue, if you want to watch USC football or UCLA basketball, that these matches tend to start at like 10:30 or 11 our time on the East Coast. And when it comes to conversation about national championships in football or the NCAA tournament in basketball, the teams in the West Coast get less attention, right, or less conversation because of the time zone issue. So this is, I think, similar, and that's an unfortunate thing. Now, with Seattle and Portland, it's a little different because the weather is different there, right?
Yeah.
So you could play those matches at we saw it with the Cascadia match. Sorry, that match was on FS1 also, Portland and Seattle. You could see that played at 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern time, even earlier sometimes, 7 or 6, and get the sort of audience on the East Coast that you want. But L.A. is a different animal. And the weather, for those of you who haven't spent time out in Southern California, the weather is wildly different and unpredictable from one part of the metropolitan area to another. The variation in climate, even going from Santa Monica to Dodger Stadium, is pretty remarkable, even though it's 10 miles or 15 miles, whatever it is. So I think it has a lot to do with attendance, to be honest with you, and building up the event as a big event in Los Angeles itself.
And it was a great television spectacle in terms of just the atmosphere in the stadium and just being sold out and LAFC fans wearing their camouflage shirts and getting excited and kind of the banter back and forth between the LA Galaxy and the LAFC fans. It was a good viewing spectacle. The shame of it is for the East Coast, it's really late. But that's part of the problem is that the United States is such a large country with so many different time zones. It just does not translate well to a national broadcast. The other thing about this too, Kartik, is back in the days of the Miami Fusion in Major League Soccer, I'm sure you remember this, is sometimes the games in the summertime, we had kickoff times of like 2 p.m. Eastern or 4 p.m. Eastern in the middle of the summer, and it just for television, because it was a television broadcast, so the game would be on, you know, either lunchtime, Pacific, or you mean basically a time zone that would be a good time zone for most of the country. And those games were absolutely, absolutely horrible. It was like, it was just so hot, humid. It was, I mean, even for us in the bleachers or in the posh seats like Kartik, I'm just joking. You know, I mean, it was so intolerable in terms of the heat. And then the players on the field, I always felt sorry for them because of the conditions that they were playing under. And this is before we had water breaks, but the conditions they were playing under and expected to be at the high level, the games oftentimes were slow and boring because it was just the players were just like dying out there on the pitch. So no easy solution there. So that is a challenge. Moving on, average John Geek says, look at the ICC game at the Texas Rangers Stadium and notice how much wider the pitch is when they can get the pitcher's mound removed. If NYCFC could get the same thing at Yankee Stadium, it would be a big improvement. And I'm sure that's something that NYCFC would love to have. And at the same time, I'm sure the Yankees fans and the club ownership would go absolutely nuts. You know, that's something that, that they don't want to do. So they're in a situation where it isn't ideal. Yes, it'd be great to be like the Texas Rangers Stadium, but if it hasn't happened yet, it's not going to happen. And that's another reason, too, why the NYCFC games, oftentimes in terms of TV ratings, people are not tuning in because those games are... I mean, it's like watching indoor soccer. The pitches are so narrow. It changes the way that the game is played. It's not a good viewing spectacle. Last but not least, Stephen Kirkpatrick says, while I agree that the new CONCACAF qualifying format creates a big disadvantage for teams 7 through 12 to make the hex, it will keep teams 13 through 18 playing competitive games throughout the cycle, which the previous format didn't do, and should improve CONCACAF overall. Now, that's something, Kartik, that, yeah, sure, we'd love to see CONCACAF improve overall, and... I don't know, but I mean, maybe the Turks and Caicos, maybe, I don't know, Aruba, if they have a team, or Nevis. All these, you mean, kind of small, which there's many, many small Caribbean nations, or maybe there's some Central American countries, too, that may benefit from this. Does that, yes, it helps CONCACAF, but does that impact the United States in any way in terms of having better teams in CONCACAF? What do you think?
Well, it would, yeah. I mean, look, I think that there are various ways you can improve CONCACAF, and there is probably a justification, if you dig deep, for this qualifying format. However, if you were going to go in this direction, I think it would have been important to have done it now for the next cycle. That way countries can do whatever they have to do to game the system or improve their FIFA ranking to be competitive, to be in that top six so that they're not stuck 7-12. I think the real unhappiness about this is that Canada, Curacao, who else is just on the outside looking in? Panama. They're being sprung this surprise when it's really too late to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be in that 7-12, that group of teams. Whereas the teams that are in 1-6, they're sitting pretty. So I think that's the big concern. Is if you said to the Canadian Federation in 2019, if you told them in 2016, hey, qualifying for the next cycle is going to be like this, they may have scheduled very differently to this point. Mm-hmm. And then people might see it as fairer. But I kind of agree with Steven's point that it should improve everybody below Team 6 in the future. I just think it's hugely unfair to do this when you're already in a cycle and there's not much the countries that are on the outside looking in can do about it.
Yeah, and from the TV viewing experience in terms of watching those teams that are 13 through 18, even if we have coverage of those games, it's probably on streaming and it's probably Flow FC, which is a whole other story. So it's one of those things that, yes, it will benefit those smaller nations, but does it have any impact on the big picture? For CONCACAF, yes. For for the other countries, not so much. I mean, because it is very, seems to be very segmented, like 1 through 6, 7 through 12, 13 through 18. Those countries will probably stay in those kind of splits pretty, for the most part, unless they can improve, and then they can move up the ladder a little bit. All right, so if you have any questions for us, have any feedback, or want to rant and rave, you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, where can they find your rants and raves and tweets and keep up to speed on what you're up to?
Yeah, KKFLA737 is the easiest place on Twitter.
All right, and you can reach me @WorldSoccerTalk for soccer stuff, and I'm starting to tweet a little bit more on my old personal account, which is @TheGaffer. But there you go. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And heading into another weekend of soccer from around the world, Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.